How much time do you have?
As much as you need.
Cool.
Sweet. Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Hi everyone, this is another episode of Fun.net, and today it's our pleasure to have Phil Hack on the show. Hi Phil.
Hi Bertrand, how are you doing?
Great, great, great. And you're here in person because you actually live in the area.
Yeah, I live about 2 miles away and happy to be here. First time on your show.
Yeah.
And it's a pleasure.
So you work from home?
Yes, I do.
How cool is that?
It's great. When I joined GitHub, about 60 or 70% of us were remote. Now it's down about 50, I think. But in the engineering group, it's around, I think, 50 or 60% of us work all over the world.
Right. So GitHub is a very distributed kind of company.
Yeah, very much so. And I think one of the interesting aspects of it is that because we started working that way very early on, even when the core group was in San Francisco, they would often work from cafes or from home. It's very much in the culture. So if you recall, you probably know this, anytime you are in a call with someone remote at Microsoft, you spend the first 15 minutes trying to get the equipment working. So we have a lot less of that, except nowadays when we call people in our headquarters, they often have the same issue.
Yeah.
But it's more like 5 minutes.
Okay, so I guess everybody knows you, but just in case there are one or two people out there who don't know about you, can you tell us about your history with .NET and GitHub?
Sure. So for you one or two people who don't know me, my name is Phil Hack.
I know, right?
Yeah. those two people, they probably live in Antarctica. So I used to work at Microsoft. In fact, Bertrand and I were both on the larger ASP.NET team at the same time, ancient history. I was the program manager for ASP.NET MVC, which is a web framework for building applications. And I also was the program manager for NuGet, which is a package manager that is really taken off in that space.
Yep.
And then about 5 years ago, I joined GitHub, and I was a developer on the GitHub for Windows application. So it's a client that makes it, kind of streamlines the workflow for working with Git and GitHub. But these days, I am now a director of engineering there of a group that we call Client Apps. So we have four teams. We work on the desktop app, which is like GitHub for Windows, GitHub for Mac. We work on Atom, which is a text editor. Electron, which is sort of a framework for building cross-platform apps using web technologies. It's Node and Chromium based. And then there's an editor tools team, which we make extensions for like a GitHub extension for Visual Studio and potentially other editors.
Very nice. So you are in charge of a lot of products.
These days, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So do you still code?
Yeah, I still code. Not as much as I used to, and I kind of miss that part. The other day I was working on a fun thing, though. I was helping a coworker. We're building out this exercise for candidates to do a take-home coding exercise that we time block, but we've automated the entire process so that we could, once you submit a PR with your code solution, it gets anonymized, and then we have people get notified automatically, and they can go grade it. And so my coworker built the Ruby version, and I built the Node version. So I'm now a Node programmer.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah. JavaScript is the best language.
I know.
Sorry, I didn't mean to say that on the .NET show.
I didn't mean that.
Yeah.
I love JavaScript, but the best language.
Yeah, didn't you write Atlas back in the day?
Nice save.
Yes, I did. I did, absolutely. Yeah.
He's trying to block that from his memory.
No, I do have a history of doing JavaScript at Microsoft, so yeah, you're right.
I still write a little C# here and there, too. I work on a few open source projects, scientist.net.
Oh, you work on that?
Yeah, I started that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, scientist.net is a port of a Ruby project created by some of my coworkers. So they did the hard work of figuring out like the APIs and the design and all that. But it allows you to run A-B tests on code paths within your code. So imagine you're doing a big refactoring and you're not going to change the behavior, but you're trying to do a more, let's say, high performant pass through this thing, but you got to make sure nothing changes. Mm. So a really good example of this is we recently changed our diff and merge algorithm on GitHub.com. And we're like, we have to make sure the behavior is exactly the same. So what we did is we used scientists to run both code paths at the same time. Mm. And we'd, you know, obviously we discarded the new code path and just kept using the old one. But we would record any differences of behavior. Mm. And then over time, we'd get this nice graph of like what changed and what the performance implication was. And then at one point when we got to a point where we felt really confident that the behavior was exactly the same, we just switched over. And so scientist.net is a port of that, so you can do that sort of thing within your own applications, you know, for very tricky or very important refactorings.
Nice. So what's new in GitHub for Windows users and .NET users? Is there anything you've been working on that would be of interest to
users? So just the other day, we released a new update to Atom that has a lot of improvements for Windows users, including a 64-bit version. Do you know Damien Gard?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's working on that these days.
Oh,
yeah, so nice. Damien used to work on Link to SQL and other Link things, but he's working on Atom for, he's primarily focused on Atom for Windows, but he's working on some other cool things too within Atom. And then on the GitHub for Windows, we've slowed down a little bit on it, but we just released one with the latest version of Git, and then I've worked a little bit on that recently as well, like putting some patches together for some bug fixes and whatnot. And the PoshGit folks, so PoshGit is a PowerShell extension that gives you tab completion with Git, and it's really nice. Keith Dalby and his team over there, or it's an open source project, it's not his team, but they're about to have version 0.7 with a lot of nice improvements. So we're going to pull that in and release that soon as well.
Okay. What about the extensions in Visual Studio and the Git handling that is in VS Code as well? Did you contribute?
So we've not been working with the VS Code team on the Git handling, mm-hmm. but we have been working on the Visual Studio extension for GitHub extension for Visual Studio, and today I think it was just announced that Visual Studio 2017 is a thing. So in case nobody knew what was coming next. Total surprise for everyone. Well, I saw it online, so I know I'm not breaking any NDAs by saying that. But we will have an extension ready for that version. We recently added what we call our collaborator workflow. So if you install our extension from Visual Studio, you can log into GitHub, you can view your pull request, you can check out a pull request. You can see the diffs and all that of a pull request. So it gives you a really nice way of like working with a pull request. So if someone submits a pull request and you're like, hey, I want to try it out, see if it runs, you go to the pull request dialog. It's in the Team Explorer pane. Click on the pull request, get the code down on your machine, and then you could run the code. And that's all from within Visual Studio. Because we're running on this theory that people who really like to be in Visual Studio never want to leave, They're like wearing their pajamas.
You have different users doing.
No, we have different users, and that's why we also.
Trying pull request. That's very important, and I can't wait to test that one.
Yeah. So a lot of the work we're doing. So the nice thing about the work we're doing for Visual Studio is it's all open source. It's in github.com/GitHub/Visual Studio, which is really interesting that we chose that name because we thought, it's a GitHub extension for Visual Studio, but we still get bug reports from people on issues that are unrelated to what we're doing in Visual Studio. So we tell them to use the report feedback feature or whatever it is in Visual Studio. So yeah, don't bother us if the editor's broken. but in terms of VS Code, we've talked to them quite a bit about potential crossover and working together. I think with the recent vacation and all that, you just reminded me I need to get back in touch with those folks and see what else we can do together. Because Having a great Git experience in there and a GitHub experience in there would be, I think, useful, because I think their audience is growing quite a bit.
Yeah, it is. Definitely. So do you know that .NET is almost 15 years old now?
Wow, how old does that make me?
I'm sorry.
No, I didn't know. Isn't it like Visual Studio's birthday as well?
As well. That would be the 20th anniversary.
Yeah, if you recall, before it was called .NET, there was like the code name Cool.
Yes.
And so I was doing classic ASP and SQL Server back in the day, and we're like, oh, we got to check out this cool new language. And then it was like ASP Plus, and then it became ASP.NET. So yeah, I was there at the beginning.
.NET was cool before it was a thing.
Yeah. And it's trying to get its cool back now, right?
Well, yeah. I hope. So, do you remember the first time you came in contact with .NET?
Yeah, I took a course with Jeffrey Richter, the Wintellect, back when he was in Wintellect. I don't know if that's still a thing, but up here in Redmond, my company flew me out here, and I took a course, and it was pretty deep, you know, like everything Richter does, right? So yeah, that was my first exposure, really. And then, you know, I got his C# via CLR book. Actually, back then it was called something else. I can't remember, like the .NET framework or something.
You've written a few books yourself, right?
Yeah.
I remember one with your head on the cover, and maybe Hanselman's head.
Yeah. People call it the five-head book.
Yes, Rob Connery was there.
Yeah, because it's me, Scott Hanselman, Rob Connery, and Scott Guthrie.
Yes.
And apparently we all have big foreheads, and so big that people call them five heads, and they call it the five head cover. And then someone made a Photoshop that one where that's my claim to frame. I have a very elongated forehead, and
we should probably
it's like
use
asymptotic
that
in growth.
We should probably use that image for the the preview of the video.
Yeah. But that book was about ASP.NET MEC 1 when we released it, and I think it did fairly well. It was fun. It was fun for if you find you know, beating yourself up and torture fun. It was a fun experience writing that book.
Yeah, writing books is an interesting experience.
Yeah, it's. I don't know why I keep doing it. I always hate it every single time, and then like I'll have an idea and like, like that idea needs to get out there, but I should just write a Medium post and be done with it.
Is there anything coming in GitHub that you'd like to talk about? Or that you can talk about?
No, I mean, we generally don't like to talk a whole lot about what we're working on. Mainly,
until it's done, you mean?
Yeah, because I mean, if I had, there's so many things that we've started and sort of decided to prioritize something different.
Yeah.
And I think if people knew what could have been there and didn't, you know, quite make it just yet, like people would be upset. But then, you know, they wouldn't realize, well, but that led to something else that you really like out there, right? Like, I can tell you, like, some things we just released, I think. I'm starting to blur the lines of what's actually out there and what's coming. But, you know, like we've improved like the pull request flow quite a bit recently. Yeah. And I think that's been kind of a long time coming. You know, the ability.
The reviews.
Yeah, the reviews and, you know, being able to do that. And then I realize I'm live, so I don't want to make a mistake and like, steal anyone
well,
else's thunder.
There is this feature where you can instead of just putting individual comments, you can actually put several comments as part of a single
review.
And you can give the pull request an approve or reject or demand changes. That sort of workflow.
So that's been out there for a little while now, and you know, mainly we've been a lot of the features in the last year have been sort of in a response to the Dear GitHub letter. So we've really focused a lot on maintainer and open source workflows. We'll have more of that coming. just recently I was involved in a discussion on about .NET language design. You know, speaking of .NET, and we've received a lot of feedback about the challenges of holding language design discussions in GitHub, and so
yes.
I've definitely shared that feedback internally with folks, and so you know, we may not like address them, you know, one by one, you know, individually, but I'm hopeful that at some point there will be a more holistic, you know, solution that kind of addresses like a lot of those key things all at once.
Yeah, so for people who haven't followed that, the story was that the language design for .NET languages was done on GitHub. Still is to this day, but it actually went to a mailing list for a while, and people were really upset about that.
Yeah.
So it came back on GitHub. Well, it is coming back on GitHub. I shouldn't say that it did, but it is coming back on GitHub, I believe. Well, all the details are easy to find about
this.
Yeah,
you can find that on GitHub.
But apparently the way the comments threads work on GitHub is not entirely 100% satisfactory to that particular usage.
Right. I mean, issues are really optimized for like, you know, issues, right? Like bug reports. And when you have these open-ended, long-term threaded discussions,
yes.
It starts to break down for what the language design team needs. Mm. But it's great for me as a consumer, you know, like where I just want to check out, like, what's the latest discussion on tuples or whatever. It's been wonderful, and I've really enjoyed seeing the
C# it's searchable. It's
searchable. You can cross-reference people, all that thing. But I understand. I'm also sympathetic to the language design team, who's got to deal with this huge influx of, you know, conversations where people are drilling down into different things, and it's all interwoven. And they're like, yeah, this is hard for us to manage. What's funny is I think one of the problems is that. And I'm working through this with one of the engineers where I think there's a bug in Outlook in how it doesn't group messages from GitHub because Gmail does it. And so he thinks it's a bug in GitHub. And so we're like iterating now over email, trying to figure out like what is the root cause, because I'm happy to, you know, like to go and try to, you know, figure out what's wrong on our side. But, you know, we're like digging deep into the SMTP spec.
Okay. Is it fair to say that the way GitHub works with smaller open source projects and larger open source projects, the experience has some significant differences? And is it something that you're working on improving? Or
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the matters of scale just are difficult for any project anywhere you host it, right? Anywhere you put it. You know, managing a project like Rails on, you know, GitHub or
right.
.NET for that matter versus, you know, scientist.net or OctaKit. You know, that's another small project I'm involved with. Like, you know, we get so few comments and this and that, you know, related to it. But, you know, we have our own challenges with like Atom is a really good example.
Yeah.
The amount of incoming just gets challenging, but a lot of that can't really be solved by technology anyways, right? Like the technology can maybe ameliorate some of the friction of it, but you know, we just need more hands on deck helping to triage all this stuff. It's just too much. So I think we are aware of it. Like the number of projects that hit that scale obviously are much smaller than the number of small projects, but you know, it's almost as if like our product and GitHub is maturing around the same age as like at the same pace as like the whole community, maybe slightly behind, right? Where we are now facing the same kind of problems these larger open source projects or larger companies are facing. And so we're starting more and more to address them. So like, you know, for example, Microsoft on GitHub, you know, has its share of challenges, right? You're a 100,000 person company. You know, we have orgs. And Microsoft in a single org would be somewhat unwieldy. So, you know, like we don't have that problem. We're only, you know, 600 people or so. But, you know, we're getting to that point where like, yeah, you know, this if the product doesn't work for us, we'll be more highly motivated to address those issues that we run into. But we're also, you know, very careful. Like we have a good relationship with Microsoft. We're listening to you all. we have good relationships with, you know, like Facebook and Google, and we, you know, they all, you all have a similar set of challenges with scale on GitHub. And so, you know, I can't say specifically what we're doing to do address it, but that we are listening and we are working on things, I think.
You mentioned number of projects, that it was a relatively small number of projects that had this kind of issue, but is it the right metric? I mean, if you look at the number of contributors.
How does it
compare? Do you have, when you compare number of contributors in small projects and number of contributors in larger projects, what kind of scale do you get?
That's a really good question. I mean, when you look at like sort of the long tail, right? Yeah. Like if you sum up that part of the curve versus the part that has the big projects, like what is the thing? I actually don't know. That is a good question for me to ask others, you know, like out of curiosity. You know, if you're interested in figuring that out yourself, there's something called the GitHub Archive. So you can connect to it using Google BigQuery, for example, and you can actually run your own queries against all our public event data. So it's a really good way to see, find out, investigate the open source community yourself.
Yes.
It's one of the ways that, for example, I discovered that I was trying to, you know, one of the, like, at this point in my, you know, in my role, like I don't necessarily have skin in the game of whether .NET succeeds or not, right? For me, it's more important to know, well, is it continuing to grow or not? Because that tells me how much to invest in that area, right? Mm-hmm. So I need to know the answer, not like confirm my biases. And so, you know, one of the tools I use is GitHub Archive, and we looked at like the fastest growing communities on GitHub. And, you know, C# is among those, right? It's, I think, I don't know if it's second or third in terms of recent growth. A lot of that I would attribute to Microsoft's embracing of it and moving .NET and all this other stuff to it that has, you know, add-on effects for everyone else moving there. But that doesn't tell me the full picture of .NET's growth, right? Like, that just tells me that .NET has finally discovered GitHub and is moving there in droves. It doesn't tell me if the overall community is growing. But it is an interesting data point, and I think you know, using GitHub Archive to study that kind of stuff is really interesting. So you can, that's your homework.
Yes.
You can answer that question.
Oh yeah. And I want to say GitHub is a fantastic source of data for everything that has to do with open source, of course. And as you said, it's only part of the picture, but it's such an important part of the picture today.
Yeah.
Stack Overflow is another one that has a lot of interesting data. So between those two, you can get a lot of data free, and anybody can do that. It's really interesting.
Yeah, like Stack Overflow is great with that, where all their data is Creative Commons. And they recently published something about what languages do people search or ask questions about in the weekdays and the weekends, and you know, they're very different. And so I was, you know, folks at GitHub were wondering, well, what would our data look like, and would it be different because, like, you know, what you ask about on the weekend versus what you're actually coding on the weekends, you know, might be two different things as well, right? Side projects versus homework, you know, that's a hypothesis. And so, you know, there's a hypothesis there that we could actually test out with the data if someone had the spare time to do so.
So I don't know how much you're following what's happening with .NET. Is there anything in .NET that's happening today that you're particularly excited about?
Well,
or not?
You know, I've been very much in a wait and see because of the churn, like, you know, with OctaKit and Scientist.net, for example, you know, we embraced Project JSON and now we're trying to convert it back to CSproj.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I'm, you know, having been on the other side, I'm sympathetic to the decisions, but as a open source maintainer, I'm just like, fortunately, I have some amazing contributors, and I basically just said, hey, can you all figure this out? And they're doing it, you know? And so many props to the folks contributing to those projects. They're doing the work that I don't have to figure out and, you know, right now don't want to. But I'm kind of looking at where, you know, that hockey puck is going, right? And I think the direction is really interesting to me. You know, .NET Standard kind of cleaning up the versioning nightmare that was introduced with PCLs, and the cross-platform aspects of it, I think will be really interesting. for me personally, you know, it's like, I don't know how much I'm gonna be using that, you know, .NET Core, you know, in the near future, because like if I'm doing cross-platform desktop, you know, naturally I'd probably choose Electron, but if I was doing cross-platform mobile, then, you know, that becomes like .NET Core becomes a really interesting option for that. My brother, for example, is doing a coding dojo. Mm-hmm. So he's my younger brother, and he's trying to make a career change. And Coding Dojo is one of these coding bootcamp schools. There's like, you know, General Assembly and all these other ones. And they're learning like Node and Ruby on Rails. And I was like, how many of these schools are teaching like C# .NET Core, right? Like, I don't think that'll happen until .NET Core is really baked and been out there for a while. But it could be a good option for learning if things get cleaned up and, you know, there's,
it gets less confusing. I know that Scott Hanselman's team, in particular Maria, is doing some work to get .NET in some of those schools.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how pervasive that is. I think for me, like, you know, for .NET to continue growing and to be successful, it needs to really gain that mindshare and people learning, right? Like, if you go to, how many colleges have it as part of their curriculum? How many boot camps, include as an option? Like, Node is everywhere, right? Like, Node is like table stakes at this point. Any of these schools are gonna teach you a bit of Node, because no matter what you're doing with the web, you're gonna have to learn JavaScript anyways, might as well learn Node. So I think C# has its work, or .NET has its work. See, I always associate .NET and C#, and F# and VB.NET. They all have their work cut out for them to really gain that level of penetration in the developers who are starting to learn how to do it. You know, the enterprise, it's you know, it's great, right? It's already there.
Yeah. Do you think that JavaScript has a very particular place because it's what runs in the browser? Or is there something more to it? Having worked on Electron,
well, I can tell you all the things wrong with JavaScript, right? I think the fact that it runs in the browser and it's sort of the, you know, lingua franca of the web gives it a special place in. I bet people are tweeting me. It gives it a special place in, you know, like in terms of like, it's very hard to, you know, unseat it, right? Mm-hmm. We've run into a lot of problems with it, right? The fact that there's no int type, you know, like numbers are this weird thing, and there's no real threading model. You can't control whether things are allocated on the heap or stack. Like, all this causes us to drop into other things, you know, where we're like, oh, let's, you know, we're gonna have to drop into C++. Oh my goodness, you know. Well, we're learning that modern C++ has improved quite a bit, but.
Yeah, but it's still a tall cliff.
Yeah, it's still dangerous, right? And there's Rust, which is promising, but we've had trouble getting Rust to build on Windows properly. And, you know, this is an area where, like, potentially, you know, like, .NET Core C# could, you know, be an option there, right? Like, depending on what type of problem we're trying to solve, where we need something cross-platform, we need it to interop with JavaScript really well. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, if you're always gonna have to learn JavaScript, and that's, I think, the advantage that it has right now. The other new development, though, is like things like TypeScript, I think, are like really interesting in that they kind of shore up some of the problems with JavaScript, right? Like, we've been doing, some teams over at GitHub have been using TypeScript quite a bit, and, you know, I have some folks who worship at the Church of Anders, you know? And, I really like TypeScript. I like it a lot. I like that it gives, a bit more, like, comfort in, you know, being able to, you know, like, describe your intentions for how code variables should be used and have the system actually check types and all that. You know, the stuff I'm used to in C#.
It manages to remain close to JavaScript in spirit and to be very, very friendly to .NET developers.
Yeah. But, you know, it doesn't solve the performance problems, right? Like, you know, Atom is a good example of this, where, like, there's some structures, data structures that we're having to rebuild in other languages because, like, we just can't quite get the control and both in memory and performance sticking solely with JavaScript.
Interesting. So Atom actually falls back to native code a lot?
Like, you know, we're trying to keep as much as possible in JavaScript because it's just easier for people to pick up and contribute. But there are, you know, for the text editor, there may be key data structures that are so important to the performance and the memory consumption that we, you know, are investigating, like, you know, rewriting in C++.
I see. Interesting. Kendra, do we have any questions from...
No, I've been checking Gitter and Twitter, and it looks like it's pretty silent, but we do have a lot of people watching, so
Hi, people.
Hi, people.
Well, there are also people watching later, people from the future.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
They can go back in time and ask questions.
Yeah.
I had to bring time travel into it.
I used to be a physicist, so immediately my head starts
Bertrand's in another place now.
Yeah.
I wonder.
You know, one thing but to go back to the recent stuff at .NET, like one thing that's really exciting about it is to see it happening in the first place. When I was working on ASP.NET MVC, we'd often have these meetings where we're like, oh, why are we doing it this way? Well, we're building on top of the existing .NET framework, which has been around 13 years, and you know, there's these like hacks upon hacks upon hacks to account for like long dead systems that were written, you know, 10 years ago that are no longer around, but you know, because of back compat, you know, we have to do things this way, right? And Hunter and I used to joke about wanting to create ASP2.NET, where we just throw everything out, rebuild the whole thing, and you know, build it from scratch and have it all be great. And you know, I was joking. I mean, it was like, yeah, I wanted it, but I was like, yeah, this will never happen. But somehow, you know, it's happening.
Yeah, well, rewrites are a well-known problem in software engineering. So.
Right. Well, I think the beauty of this approach is you take the good code, you get rid of all the back compat and stuff, so you're not rewriting everything from scratch, but you're cleaning up all the code that you couldn't clean up because you were concerned about back compatibility. I mean, you know, back compat is great and all, but like, so when you can't even move anything forward because like you're concerned about, you know, some... you know, Windows 3.1 user, like, you know, that one person out there.
So, yeah, it's useful to shake the tree from time to time and see what falls. Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, you're going to, you know, like, I don't envy the challenge of, like, people, getting people to port over and explaining that, because I know there's a lot of people will be very upset about, like, oh, I got to learn this new thing, you know. Mm.
Do you have any, is there anything that you would like to see in .NET that if you had a magic wand and you could make any feature happen?
Oh, gee. I bet a better idea will come to me later, but one thought that comes to me is I think you wrote a blog post about image generation on the server, and it sounds like there isn't actually yet a good solution there.
Well, I believe there is now. There is more than one, actually.
Okay.
So define good.
Well, each one has trade-offs, and those trade-offs don't seem fundamental to the problem. So, like, one that doesn't have any of those trade-offs.
That's a fair point. So I would say that there are basically two categories of libraries that we can use today. One is completely managed code, and there is only one library in that category. That's Image Sharp. Then you have those that require a native dependency. And those are a little trickier to install on some platforms, or in some cases are not cross-platform at all. There is KiaSharp that has become available for .NET Core. I need to update that post, by the way. I'm working on that. It will come probably next week. But with KiaSharp, we have a library that has a native counterpart, so the install can be tricky on Linux, for example. You still have to build some stuff from source.
Oh, I thought of something. How about a GraphQL client library?
A what?
GraphQL client library. We don't have to write it.
I don't even know what GraphQL is.
So GraphQL is this specification and API developed by Facebook, but we've adopted it as well. You might recognize it if I describe it. Microsoft technology that came close, but isn't quite GraphQL, which was, oh my God, REST-based.
Yeah. Now I know what you're talking about. Yes, okay.
What was the one that we came up with? We actually built our first NuGet API on it and instantly regretted it. What? OData, that's it. So it basically it's kind of like OData, but done better. And no offense to OData folks, but like it's, you know, you can send a request and say, here's the shape of the data at once. So, you know, here's a good example for the GitHub API, the type of thing you'll be able to do as we flesh out our GraphQL API, which is, hey, another thing that I can talk about that's coming. So we have a GraphQL API, but we're actually fleshing it out even more. So, you know, today, if you wanted to get like, you can make an API call for an issue, and then for that issue, you can, you know, grab all its comments, right? Or, you know, but if you want a set of issues and a set of comments for those issues, you would have to make, you know, N plus one requests, right? Like, with GraphQL, you could describe the shape of the data you want. Like, hey, I want the top 10 issues and all their comments, and but only these fields in those comments.
And then that can be optimized. And
yeah, and so you send that, we do the parse the thing, and then we figure out what you need, and then we send it back, and we do the one query on the backend side. And so that's going to lead to a lot more efficient use of the API, more powerful use of the API, where you know, you can get just what you want. You can optimize what gets sent over the wire, and yeah, and like I was running into problems trying to do some basic stuff. The .NET framework team, you guys have done a really good job with some of your blog posts about the state of your open source work on GitHub, and you had this one chart. I remember it was like the average time that it takes someone to commit on an issue, and I thought that's beautiful. I wish we had that graph. I'll go make one, you know, to on my own project using our API. And I was like, oh man, because I had to, you know, request every single issue and then request the, you know, all the comments just to get the first one for every single issue.
Yeah.
And you know, I'd hit the API limit if I went too fast. So with GraphQL, that'll be a thing of the past.
Right. Yeah. So you have all that data that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, so I could have used the GitHub archive, but I was being lazy. Yeah. Like, I already know how to use the API. I was like, I'll just do the API. So today I would just go to the GitHub archive and figure it out.
Right, but better ways to query that data upcoming.
Yeah, because benefit of the GraphQL is it'll work against your private repos, which won't be in the GitHub archive data for obvious reasons.
So there are no libraries in .NET that do GraphQL today? Or
that's a good question. I haven't yet looked, to be quite honest, but you know, like that might be a thing I should find out, like if there's one.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know.
Yeah. And then incorporate it into the framework so I don't have to look.
Yeah, well, that's a different question. But step one is to see if there
well,
is.
Well, you asked me for my wish list. That's what I wish.
Oh yeah, that's perfect.
I'm not saying it's reasonable. I'm just saying that's what
I
want.
Yeah, and I gave you the magic wand.
Like so most things I want, it's not necessarily reasonable.
Yeah, sure. Just to finish that thought about imaging libraries. So Skia Sharp is really getting very interesting because now it's compatible with .NET Core. It is cross-platform. It's very cross-platform. You can even use it on Android and iOS.
Ah, cool.
I believe. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. But, well, that's probably why Xamarin is so interested in it. And Xamarin is maintaining the Skia Sharp library. The wrapper.
Check it out.
So yeah, and it's so blazing fast. It's the fastest of all. So.
Cross-platform and fast. See, that's
It's really hitting a sweet spot. But I really like ImageSharp for the fact that it's completely managed, which means that it makes it so easy to install. It's just a NuGet.
That's nice.
That's it. You don't need to install any native dependencies.
Just go use
By NuGet. The way, oh, we need to stick it in Miguel's face. How do you say NuGet? What is
NuGet?
There you go. That is the official.
By the way, is there an alternative pronunciation?
Because Miguel, you know, his fanciness says Nuget.
Nuget, yeah. Well, he's a little frou frou right now. Well, what's the word? Shishi? Is it fancy?
Yeah, shishi. Yeah, that's a thing. Sure.
Anyways, I love Miguel, but I. this is one of the few times he's wrong. Well, it's funny because I think Alon used to call it Niger, and then the like Nubkeg I can live with, like, you know.
Oh, you can? Oh, I cannot.
Well, I mean,
stand
like, is it, new PKG is kind of like a mouthful.
Package.
New package. Yeah, I guess you could call it that. Like, I'm fine with Nubkeg, but I think it's Nuget, not Niger.
You don't think it's official? It's the right pronunciation.
There you go. Yeah, you heard it here first.
Right. As long as no one's saying nugget.
Nugget is not good. Nugget. Yeah. Or nougat.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, you have the authority. So we should respect your authority.
Yeah. This like GIF and GIF. Like we're getting into these.
Oh, let's not get there.
Yeah.
All right. Well. Anything else you want to share with our audience?
No, I mean, you know, check out the .NET stuff on GitHub and check out the stuff that I mentioned, the Visual Studio extension if you want to contribute to that,
yep.
Atom, Electron. We also have some conferences coming up, so if you're interested in learning more about
GitHub
stuff.
Yes. Just before we talk about that, everything you mentioned is open source, so yeah, contributions
welcome. So contributions are welcome. Check it out. Try the code.
Yeah, absolutely. Conferences then?
Oh, there's some GitHub conferences. I think we've announced it on the GitHub blog, so we have some in Europe. I think one's coming to, I can't remember if that's public, but we have some conferences. Check out our github.com/blog, so if you want to learn more about the stuff that we're doing. We'll be talking about that stuff, and one of the conferences I think is focused on open source maintainers and kind of the trying to that would be a good place, for example, for the .NET team, language design team to attend and you know grab GitHub employees in person nicely and let them know what challenges you're facing.
Maybe one last thing, one last question. What would you say to a .NET developer who wants to get into open source and doesn't really know where to start?
Oh, that's a great question. So if you're a .NET open source developer, you want to get into open source.
Well, you're a .NET developer, not open source.
Oh, .NET developer, but you want to get... you know, I would look at open source projects on GitHub that are well run, that you respect. You know, I think, you know, OctaKit and like Scientist.net are kind of small, right? Like they're a good example of like how to get started, right? I would say like, you know, we have things like the, you know, the license, you know, picking a license. I actually started a site at GitHub called ChooseALicense.com, so it kind of helps you walk through. That should be one of the first things you know you consider. It's like, hey, pick a license that makes it very clear how people can use the code you're writing. You know, pick a contributor agreement, like a write a contributing doc, write a code of conduct. We have all that those templates on GitHub, and then look at. So just reach out to other open source maintainers about like sort of the social aspect of you know managing source. Like how do you deal with the fact? How do you deal with entitled developers? Right, like you're going to get them, and you know learning to on one level have a little empathy even for them and realize like you know they're at the end of a long day being frustrated. I actually wrote a blog post about this called "You Don't Need a Thick Skin." About you know, kind of a way to deal with it that helps you retain your sanity, which is to put yourself on that side and say, yeah, that sucks. You know, unfortunately, like I don't have the time to fix it. You know, I'm a human being, but would you like to help? And often I've had so many responses where people were you know coming at me real angry, and then you know you express to them, you communicate to them that you're just a human being who has other responsibilities too. And is like a pattern. Like the response would be, oh man, I'm so sorry. You know, it's the end of a long day. I needed to get home and this wasn't working and I was just pissed off and my wife left me. And you know, like all these things, that bad things that happened to him this day. My dog died. It's like a country music song. And they apologize though. They're like, yeah, you know, like I shouldn't have lashed out, but I did and I'm sorry. And so, you find a lot of times when people are really that heated, it's a case like that. And so if you can diffuse it, totally that helps. Right. There will be trolls and there will be people.
They exist.
You know, and then you can just, now we have this team at GitHub called the Community and Safety Team. And so they've been building out a lot of features that help you navigate and improve your experience on GitHub so that you can close threads, you can block people, you can manage the people that you've blocked. So, you know, in case they've, you know, improved. So, so you have a lot more control over that too. And getting to know those tools, I think, are very useful as an open source maintainer. Like learning when to close a thread and say, hey, look, you know, we've heard your feedback. Thanks for the discussion, but we're going to close this because it's devolved into chaos, right?
Code of conduct helps with that because it sets where the line is.
Yeah, code of conduct sets where the line is, but, you know, like having a document up there is only the beginning, you know, actually.
Then you need to apply it and
apply, yeah, and apply, you know, like ask the people who are involved to apply it as well. Yeah. But there's some conferences that help. There's probably too many for me to name. We have a group that kind of focuses on maintainers at GitHub. So, you know, when in doubt, you can always write to support@github.com. I mean, usually it's like about issues with GitHub, like, oh, I don't know how to do this, or this isn't working right. But, you know, I guarantee if you wrote to support@github.com, it's like, hey, what are resources for me to get better as a maintainer? Like, we'll help you. And hopefully, search GitHub first, but you know, like, no, I don't want, you know, like our support people to be overburdened with a bunch of requests. But really, like, you know, if you can't find this stuff, feel free to email support@github.com because we really care about the open source community. You know, many of us are ourselves maintainers of open source projects, so we're usually very willing to help others get started.
Excellent. I also want to mention that you have a blog. At hacked.com, it's spelled HAACKED.com, and it's gotten less technical over the last few years, but you have lots of really good life advice for developers, which I enjoy every single post, so I recommend everyone go there, but you should write more often.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, as my career has gone from being a developer to more managerial, so has my blog and even my conference talks. Speaking of plugs, like, I'm going to be the track host for a soft skills track at QCon London in March. So if you're in the London area, come check it out. And, you know, I put soft skills in quotes because when you look at like what actually makes a team or a company effective, right? You know, learning, you know, a new language feature like gets you a marginal improvement in productivity, perhaps, if you're lucky. But getting a group of people who aren't working so well together to like really gel and work well together, like can get you an order of magnitude of improvement. And so these talks kind of relate to various different types of skills that we don't normally talk about in the tech community, but could really improve, you know, your team, your company, yourself. Some of them are focused individually. So check it out. And so that's been kind of the stuff that's been in my mind lately, and I'll probably be writing more about it as the year goes on.
Cool.
Great. Think I'm going to immediately go read your post about you don't need to have a thick skin right after this.
Yeah, if you're a PM at Microsoft, definitely read it because, I think it's even harder as a PM at Microsoft than it was. When I joined GitHub, I just got love, and it was weird. Like, we released GitHub for Windows, and I was like, okay, I'm prepared for the haters, and it was just like, you know, love coming all over, and I was like,
oh, wow.
What is going on here? Like, where are the people, like, calling me, you know, morally bankrupt, or this, right? And it was quite a welcome change, and I, you know, Microsoft's come a long way from then, too, right? Like, don't get me wrong, but you know, like, with such the audience that you have, like, yeah, it does help to realize, like, to be prepared and know how to deal with like that negativity that will come at you no matter what you do. You know, nowadays, GitHub's gotten, I think, big enough where I get plenty of negativity too now. So, you know, we've hit that Microsoft level.
Cool, good for you.
Congratulations. I see.
Okay, well, thanks, Phil. It's been a very, very good conversation, I think. I hope you all have enjoyed it. And we all see all you people again next week.
Goodbye.
Thanks,
Kendra.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks.
Bye.
For those two people watching.
We had it even more than two, right?